United States versus Mosley.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm Mark Michalik. I'm representing Mr. Mosley. Your Honors, I'm trying to preserve Mr. Mosley's opportunity to be sentenced under the Fair Sentencing Act if the Supreme Court ultimately resolves the current circuit conflict in his favor. Mr. Mosley's criminal conduct predated the August 3, 2010 passage of the Fair Sentencing Act, but he was sentenced well after, on May 13, 2011. After his sentencing, the First Circuit came out with the Douglas case on May 31st, and the 11th Circuit came out with the Rojas case on June 24 of 2011.
Creating any difference here based on the admissions in the plea agreement?
You know, that was my initial thought, Your Honor, about the plea agreement. But in the Pineda-Buenaventura case, there was also a five-year mandatory minimum agreed to in the plea agreement. The plea agreement, the parties agreed that Mr. Pineda Buenaventura was responsible for at least 500 grams of cocaine. Counsel made no objection to the PSR at sentencing. The court adopted the PSR, and nevertheless, on plain error review, the case was remanded to the district court because of what the court, I believe, called an ambiguous factual finding by the district judge.
We don't really have that here, though, based on the admissions.
I concede that it's somewhat different, but I think that as far as the guideline range and the amount of drugs driving the guideline range, I waived any challenge to that. But that's different than the Pinkerton analysis under the for conspiracy, which would drive the mandatory minimum. Mandatory minimums are not a statutory, I guess, creature. They're facts the judge can find by a preponderance of the evidence. Conspiracy is about what the particular defendant is responsible for under the crime he's convicted of, whereas relevant conduct can be outside of the crime of conviction, but still.
In his plea agreement, the defendant admitted that the reasonable foreseeability issue, that the amounts were attributable to him as reasonably foreseeable.
Well, Your Honor,
flowing from the conspiracy.
Your Honor, the plea agreement contains the plea agreement talks about 5 kilograms of cocaine, which is fictional. The government insisted on that being in the plea agreement, but I don't believe there's any evidence that Mr. Mosley was involved in dealing powder cocaine. The government's reason for including the 5 kilograms amount of powder cocaine was that they wanted to preserve the maximum, and also they wanted to preserve the mandatory minimum penalty in case Congress acted and changed the law, which they did.
And why did he admit to it if it was fictional?
Because he didn't want to go to trial and get a higher sentence than he would have otherwise.
So you and the government, you're telling us, agreed to mislead the district court?
I don't think that, Your Honor, we were trying to mislead the district court, but that was the...
Did you tell the district judge this amount was fictional?
That was in there as support for the, it said in the alternative, 50 grams of crack or 5 kilograms of cocaine. It was, I misspoke when I excluded that the crack amount. That was okay. What the plea agreement said.
That sounds to me a lot like a waiver, that where both sides agreed to terms as part of the overall deal to preserve the mandatory minimum sentence regardless of what Congress might do, right?
I agree, Your Honor.
Why should we not treat it that way?
Because in Pineda Buenaventura, the court didn't do that. It's the same scenario. There was a plea agreement. The Pineda Buenaventura was charged with possession with intent to distribute more than, I believe it was actually conspiracy to to possess with intent to distribute more than 500 grams of cocaine. And he admitted to that at the plea hearing. And nevertheless, on plain error review, that case
there
was
an inconsistency there, right? Where's the inconsistency here?
There's a couple things that, first of all, we knew going into sentencing that the district court was not going to depart. You know, this is a substantial assistance case. We knew going into sentencing, both parties did, and I believe the government will tell you the same thing, that the court was not going to depart from the guideline range, but from the mandatory minimum. So, really making a, and also this specific district court often will decline to address guideline objections. So in this case, the guidelines didn't seem to matter. And you know, the court, when it was sentencing Mr. Mosley, said, well, you know, the relevant conduct is really attributable to Tyrann Mosley, the co-defendant whose conduct or whose drug amount would get Mr. Mosley above the 280 grams that would be necessary in order for him to have a 10-year mandatory minimum under the Fair Sentencing Act. So it seems to me that what was happening is the PSR was trying to implement the plea agreement level 32, so it just chose to add in Tyrann Mosley's drug amount in order to get to that number.
Well, it's not a...
Go ahead.
We start out with a fictitious powder cocaine, right? You say it didn't exist.
Right. I mean, that's in the alternative in the plea.
Yeah. So the judge doesn't know that. Then we have the probation officer utilizes it to gin up misleading pre-sentence report.
Well, I don't think that's what happened, Your Honor. The pre-sentence report does not mention powder cocaine, except in noting that was the government's position. It's the pre-sentence report is all about crack cocaine. It's about the 230 some grams that it attributed to Mr. Mosley directly, and then roughly some 600 more that were attributable to Tyrann Mosley. It's all cocaine base. There's no indication that the court thought it was imposing a cocaine sentence when it was really a crack case. The court knew it was a crack case. The PSR was all about who was dealing crack. So I don't think that is really something that needs to be a concern here. As far as what basis the court was using to sentence Mr. Mosley. The court also emphasized its lack of discretion in going below the mandatory minimum, noting that it can only consider Mr. Mosley's substantial assistance. And that also suggests to me that there might have been a different result if the case gets remanded because the Fair Sentencing Act is found to apply to defendants who are sentenced after its effective date. I see I'm in rebuttal time, so if there's no more questions, I'll go over there.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Bridget Demoshek, Assistant United States Attorney, appears on behalf of the appellee of the United States of America. The District Court adopted the PSR finding that the defendant was responsible for 804.8 grams of crack cocaine. Despite having the knowledge and opportunity to object to the PSR, the defendant failed to do so. In fact, in his sentencing memorandum that was submitted after the PSR was distributed, the defendant stated that he was not filing an objection because the drug count quantity was correctly calculated under 1B1.3 as a result of jointly undertaken criminal activity. And then, at sentencing, when the defendant was asked if he had reviewed the PSR and if he had any objections to the PSR, he said, yes, I have reviewed it, and no, I don't. For all of these reasons, the defendant has waived his argument that the district court erred when it held him responsible for 804.8 grams of crack cocaine. I'd like to touch upon the defendant's argument that there was a fiction in the plea agreement with respect to the 5-kilogram weight. As a little bit of background, at the time that the plea agreements were being negotiated, and in fact at the time that this case was charged, which was late 2009, the Department of Justice had heard, and it was anticipated, that the crack and powder guidelines would be amended. However, it was unclear when it was going to happen and how. Therefore, as set forth in the government's brief, when negotiating the plea agreements, the government agreed to treat crack and powder cocaine on a 1-to-1 ratio. That means that in the plea agreement, when the government agreed to recommend a level 32 based on 5 kilograms of cocaine, when the parties agreed to recommend a level 32 based on 5 kilograms of cocaine, this was crack cocaine. This was a 40-defendant drug conspiracy. To date, most of the defendants have been sentenced, and this is not an unclear issue. We are talking about crack cocaine. When we went before Judge Adelman and explained that we didn't know how crack and powder were going to be treated in the future, and it was a 1-to-1 ratio, the court understood that too. The defendant did not object to the PSR despite having an opportunity to do so.
You did explain to Judge Adelman why the plea agreement was worded the way it was.
Yes. Now, I should qualify that by saying I don't know if I did it in this sentencing because there have been about 30 sentencings. So I don't know if I did it in this one, but I know that holistically the court understood that crack was involved.
The agreement was sort of an omnibus plea agreement, so far as I can tell. There was a generic sentence that applied to every defendant and then individual addendums for each individual defendant.
That's correct. It runs 37 pages in length, and the goal really is to get it to be as efficient as possible. And to the extent the defendant ever had a question that there was not a factual basis for a level 32 in the plea agreement, it could have been redone and renegotiated, and it was not done. There was no arm twisting to get the defendant to sign a plea agreement. This was, two lawyers negotiating basically what is a contract, and it's anticipated that the government and the defendant will be bound by this contract. And I submit to you that that is the reason why no objections were filed in the district court, because the defendant potentially could violate the plea agreement and potentially could jeopardize his 5K1.1 motion.
If I've got this straight, you were taking the position that under statutory conspiracy standards, you had more than 5 kilograms of crack cocaine attributable to the conspirators.
Correct.
Okay. And then you agreed for guideline purposes, we'll go with just 800 for Mr. Mosley.
Correct. And the government had no objection to the district court starting at 120 months for its departure level with respect to all defendants, because as a matter of contract, we anticipated that there was going that was our base offense level as a matter of a contract. While we anticipated, and actually in fact it happened in other cases where the base offense level came in higher, the government continued to argue for a level 32. Unless there are any other questions, the government asks that you affirm the defendant's sentence and conviction. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. How much time?
I think the government's correct. I'm sorry. I think the government's correct that the plea drives the maximum penalty, but there still has to be fact-finding about the mandatory minimum. And I think the PSR is too general to rely upon.
I have trouble with that, and I'll tell you why. If the PSR is general and there's no dispute about it, why can't the district judge rely on that?
Your Honor, I think that the district judge can certainly rely on it. I think that the unusual factors in this case, the fact the parties knew going in that the guideline range really effectively didn't matter because the mandatory minimum was going to be the starting point. And the fact that at the time there was no circuit split about the applicability of the FSA, and I regret not raising it when I should have, even though Fisher had been decided at that point. It was frankly cowardly on my part. to not bring that up.
On the other hand, on the contrary, you got your client a heck of a deal. I don't know. You're telling us you were cowardly, you were negligent. I don't see that, frankly.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate that. If there's no more questions, I have nothing else to add.
All right. Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.